Now, Act Two of Nor Gloom of Night, starring Mr. Alan Young.
By the end of the week, I'd made up my mind to forget all about Mr. Whitney and his wife's death. Maybe Chief Gordon was right. Maybe I had put two and two together and come up with five. When you get in the habit of elaborating on things, you sometimes forget just what's the fact and what you sort of threw in for a good measure. But after lunch, that was on Friday, something happened that proved I'd been right for sure. Yes, sir, I'd been right for dead sure.
West, southwest, west, north.
I was arranging my mail as the sorting clerk tossed it in the west side bin. It was a heavy load for an off-season. There was a lot of out-of-town stuff because the westbound trains had been held up by a tremendous hailstorm the day before. Matter of fact, I hardly noticed the letter at first. I just stuck it in the back of my pouch for the rest of the first class. And then I remembered that spidery handwriting, that New York postmark, and the same square envelope.
Ernie, you must be out of your mind. This post office is not going to open a letter just because you happen to think it's important.
But it's from the same man, Mr. Henderson. We can read it and find out who it is. Have him arrested.
For what?
For murdering Miss Whitney. This letter will prove it. He's probably trying to get more money for doing it, or maybe he's blackmailing Mr. Whitney, or maybe...
This is utter nonsense, Ernie.
Or maybe Mr. Whitney's hired him to murder somebody else. Sure, that's what it is. Sure, don't you see, Mr. Henderson? That's why he's writing again. Don't you see?
No, I do not.
Somebody else is going to get murdered, Mr. Henderson. I'm positive.
Now, you listen to me, Ernie. This is a perfect example of the way your mind works. First, you come in and tell me you found a letter that looks like one you delivered before. The next thing I know, you're certain it's from the same man. Then you decide it's a blackmail note, and now you're yelling that it's a plan to murder somebody.
I'm not asking you to take my word for it, Mr. Henderson. Just unseal that envelope and read it. If I'm wrong, you can put it back together again.
Ernie. Ernie, I knew your father. He was a fine man and an honest one. And I'm going to talk to you just as he would if he were still alive. Son. This overdeveloped imagination of yours, perhaps it doesn't do much harm as a rule.
I didn't imagine this letter, sir. It's right here in my hand.
But when your daydreams cause you to suggest tampering with the United States mail, they're dangerous. Downright subversive to the operation of this post office. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, sir.
Furthermore, in the future, please remember that your job is to deliver the mail. The post office department is not in the business of catching murderers. All right, Ernie. You may go.
You're 12 minutes late on your route already.
But, Mr. Henry...
There are plenty of applicants for the job of mail carrier, Ernie.
That afternoon, West Side Avenue seemed twice as long as it ever had before. And that letter in the first-class section of my bag felt like I weighed a couple of tons. In 5 minutes, I'd get to Mr. Whitney's house, and then it'd be too late. He'd just look at the envelope, stick it in his pocket, and slam the door, and there'd be nothing I could do to stop him. Anyhow, I glanced up and saw Ms. Whitcomb peering out the window waiting for her mail. Then I got an idea. I pulled the square envelope out of my pouch and held it in my hand.
Well, Ernie, by the time you got here, I've been getting my drapes all unpleated, staring out the window.
I'm right on schedule, Miss Whitcomb.
Suppose you are. Don't see why. Just because I live out at the west end of town, I have to get my mail an hour later than anybody else. What are you waiting for, Ernie? Give it to me.
Yes, ma'am.
Wonder if there's anything from my aunt. Last I heard, she was getting better. Suppose that means she's going to die.
That square one's from out of town.
Oh, New York postmark. Well, suppose she might have had a son mail it for her. He works in the city. Well, good afternoon, Ernie.
Aren't you going to open it?
That's what one usually does with mail, Ernie, and I'm quite capable of reading my own letters without your help. Ernie! Ernie Evans, come back here.
Yes, Miss Whitcomb?
Just what do you think you're doing, young man?
Why, I...
This letter is for Mr. Whitney, and you know it.
You mean you opened it?
I did no such thing. You and that so-called police chief aren't going to trick me into reading somebody else's mail. Here's the letter, just exactly the way you gave it to me. Good day.
I put the square envelope in the back of my pouch and tried hard not to think about it as I kept walking on down the block. But as I stepped over the Jenkins kid's roller skates, I found myself wondering who was going to be killed this time. Then I remembered. Miss Whitney had a sister living over on the north side. Maybe she was the one. I'll bet that's it. As soon as I get off my route, I'll telephone her. I'll warn her to... I reached into my pouch for the next delivery. I pulled out three cards and a square envelope. I was at the Whitney house. Now I had to deliver the letter. I looked up, expecting Mr. Whitney to be waiting for me, but he wasn't there. All the shutters were closed tight, and Welcome Mat was gone from front of the door. I didn't go directly to the mailbox. I don't know why exactly. I felt that I wanted to see Mr. Whitney face to face. Maybe I had the nerve to tell him, but he couldn't get away with it. Not this time. Maybe I'd be able to say, I know what you're up to. Or maybe I'd be too scared to say anything. Then I saw the slip of pink paper stuck in the corner of the mailbox. Change of address form. C.W. Whitney. New address. General delivery. New York City. The envelope was still in my hand as I walked on down toward the corner of 11th Street. I knew why Mr. Whitney left town. Now he'd have a perfect alibi for the second murder. Maybe the killing was already over. Maybe there was nothing I could do, or maybe it was only a matter of hours or minutes. I'd never know unless I opened the letter. I pushed through the gate of the corner house and, in force of habit, looked around for Tony the Airedale. He wasn't in sight. Ms. Phillips was down on her hands and knees, weeding her marigold plants.
Hello, Ernie. You're right on time. I always know when it's 4:30. You're never more than a minute off.
Yeah, I guess so. Here's your mail.
Thank you. It isn't very exciting. Oh, is that other letter for me?
No, it's not.
Well, you look tired, Ernie. Would you like a cup of hot tea? It won't take a minute.
No, thanks, Miss Phillips. I better be getting along. See you tomorrow.
All right, Ernie.
Down, Tony.
Oh.
Down, get away.
Tony, you bad dog, get down. I've got to tell her, Ernie, you better run. Tony, you're a wicked dog. Ernie never tried to hurt you.
I was almost to the corner when I stopped and caught my breath and shifted my pack around. Then I realized I didn't have the letter. It had been in my hand when Tony had charged at me. I must have dropped it. From across the Phillips fence, I could see it, a white square on the red brick wall. Tony and his mistress had disappeared, so I opened the gate and reached for it. Tony had come around the house and beat me to it. He set up a guard over the letter. He was worrying the envelope with his teeth. Here, Tony. Give it to me. Nice dog. You don't want to eat that, Tony. Here, I'll just... Listen, Tony, I got to have that letter. Give it to me, Tony. Give it to me. Tony, let's go! The envelope had been chewed open. The bottom half of the letter was in shreds. I stepped off the curb and started across 11th Street, trying to stuff the letter back in the envelope. And then I saw what it said. Honest, I couldn't help it. It said, "Dear friend, new arrangements are satisfactory. We can stay the appointed courier at 4:30, corner of West Side and 11th. He's never late." You know, never thought I'd be grateful to the Phillips dog. But if he hadn't made me late, I'd have been in the middle of the street. And the gray coupe would have hit me instead of that telephone pole. As it was, it snapped the pole in two and didn't stop till it was halfway into the Phillips living room. Well, maybe not quite that far. But it did hit the pole. You can see the big gash in it. And that's the truth. So help me.
Alan, thank you for that. You certainly chalked up a good one for our series, and I hope you'll come back again real soon.
You won't ever have to ask me twice, Wendell, particularly if I can always work with people like Virginia Gregg, Gene Tatum, Jeanette Nolan, Herb Vigran, Parley Bear, and Paul Frees. Thanks a lot, folks.
Thanks again, Alan. We'll hear about the star of next week's Hollywood Star Playhouse show, Mr. Lee Bowman, right after our Bakers of America home economist, Miss Helen Reed, gives you an ounce of suggestion about pound cake. Miss Reed?
Thank you, Mr. Niles. The uniced pound cake you can buy at your bakery, at any food store or supermarket, is one of the best friends a dessert-minded housewife ever had. It's a cake you can serve loads of different ways. And here's one way you might like to try. Peach shortcake a la mode. Cut half-inch slices of your pound cake. Then, from brick ice cream, also cut half-inch slices. Sandwich the ice cream between two layers of cake. Then cover each serving with peaches, either fresh, frozen, or canned. And if you feel like really splurging, add a dash of whipped cream on top. Peach shortcake a la mode is the sort of dessert that takes only a moment to fix, but it looks and tastes as deluxe and delicious as something that might have taken hours of preparation. Why not buy a pound cake tomorrow? Taste what grand desserts you can make with it.
Thank you, Miss Reed. And now here's a word about next week's thrilling story on Hollywood Star Playhouse starring Mr. Lee Bowman.
You know what you want, so you wait, because it's big enough to wait for. And you figure out how to work it when the time comes. Then you find you're walking towards death, because you've stepped into the wrong pair of shoes.
Alan Young will soon be seen in the RKO production, Androcles and the Lion. Life's partially transcribed story was written for Mr. Young by Robert Libet and Frank Burt. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any similarity to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Wendell Niles inviting you to be with us again next Sunday for the Bakers of America program, Hollywood Star Playhouse. Enjoy another half hour of fine entertainment brought to you direct from Hollywood by your baker. The baker who supplies your grocer, the baker who calls at your door, and the baker in your bake shop. All helping you serve better meals through bakery foods.